What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
John.
What's that, a D?
That's an E? A D flat. John, we are in the midst of our travel series on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. Larry Rifkin, John Krofcik, and we are getting ready to go on a meditation retreat.
Meditation.
You're ready? I don't know if you can quiet down long enough, John. I think you're a little antsy about this. Are you ready to go with me? And we get into some kind of robe, and we walk around some gorgeous location, and we just think.
Hum. We just hum?
Hum. Or we say nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah, that's hard.
That's hard. We've been in broadcasting all these years, so that's a really difficult thing. But I think this is really wonderful. And a lot of people are looking for this. The answer, when you ask, what do you want to do on vacation, if it comes out that you want to do nothing, this is for you. Quiet.
Well, I think this is good for a family, too, though, because it would allow them to unplug and kind of get back in touch with important stuff.
Well, no, it is true, because our lives are so turned on and tuned in, and if we can unplug and turn off, and I think it really is important. So if really you are looking for quiet or stillness or tranquility, usually in a gorgeous place that begs for more solitude and peace. The birds are chirping, John.
Ah, yes.
The ponds are gurgling. The trees are glistening from the morning dew. John, I know you're getting excited as I talk about it. Well, no. This is an antidote to Disney World. It really is. So let's quietly reflect on these getaways, which are growing. They are really growing. It is a trend, and that's why it's on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com, because each year, more and more people are looking for these opportunities, and they can be a day trip, they can be an overnight, they can be three nights, five nights, seven, you decide. Ariel Frager, another talented travel writer introduced to us by a great resource, the Society of American Travel Writers, and we really enjoyed our conversation and the quiet. And the stillness.
Quiet and stillness.
Okay. Yes. Actually, you will hear something.
Well,
it's not that quiet.
I'd like to hear clicking on our Amazon account.
Yes, I would like to hear more people clicking over from our Amazon store.
But
I digress. Yes. We digress. Let's go and talk to Ariel Frager about meditation and retreats, another travel option available to you. And we're so glad you've been listening to the travel series. Make sure you listen to all episodes. There are six in total.
Ariel Frager, thank you for being with us today on America Trends Podcast. And you are a travel writer, but you also have a concentration that you take into a whole nother endeavor that deals with meditation and contemplation. And that takes you to a lot of travel-related activities that deal with the same. Explain that to us.
Yeah, hi. So not so much part of my work as a travel writer, but in my own interest in meditation practices, I have attended a number of meditation retreats in the Northwest and in California at different sites, doing days-long, week-long silent meditation retreats. Part of my work as a licensed professional counselor and as a school counselor is teaching mindfulness to young people, and so my own practice helps inform the work I do with kids.
So when you go to these retreats, are you finding that the company that you're keeping there is different, perhaps, than it would have been years back?
Well, you know, it's funny when you're on a silent retreat, you're with all these people, but you don't interact with them. So what happens when people talk about this, where you have these silent retreat love affairs with people that you've never actually spoken to, and you make up stories in your mind because you're quiet for days on end, you make up stories about the people you're with, and then you meet them, and then it's, they're often very different than the story you made up in your mind. There was a woman once that I was on retreat with, and I kind of had a whole story in my head. And then she spoke. I never heard her speak, and she had a British accent, which was just surprising to me because I'd never heard her speak after a week of being in her company, but never actually speaking to her. So it's a funny experience to be with people and then not actually be interacting with them.
But am I wrong that there are many of these activities and retreats that are not quite as solemn as that one or as contemplative, where there is a lot more interaction, but it's done on the basis of your interests, love of nature, your desire to unwind from a very difficult career path that you're on. So tell us how diverse they are.
Yeah, and I think it kind of depends on where you go and what the focus is. There is I live in Portland, Oregon, and within 2 hours from our home, there is a place called Brighton Bush Hot Springs, which is a retreat center that is surrounded by an old-growth forest and natural occurring hot springs. So it's one of the most relaxing places ever. So you go sit in these hot springs, you know, throughout the day, and then there's great food that is, you know, organic and vegetarian, and then lots of people around. And so then we've met some really lovely people from the area who go to Brighton Bush. We go almost as a family once a year to just kind of relax and decompress and spend time in nature, and then also not have to cook and be able to be with the family with, you know, to de-stress a little bit.
Well, when we think about a family going to Disney World or a family going to one of these retreats, I mean, they're obviously looking for a totally different experience.
Right. Right. And it's, you know, one of the things that I think about, my specialty for travel writing is family travel, is really looking at trips that are going to nurture and support the whole family rather than just the child. And going to a place like Brighton Bush where I get to relax as well rather than being stressed and waiting in line to go on a ride for 2 hours, like that's a wonderful thing, but that's kind of not my cup of tea. So I want to bring my child with me to go do things rather than it all be about the kid. So that's part of how we have been able to incorporate some of these healing type retreats into our lives as parents. And I think it's a nice thing for people to experience with their children as well, because when parents are relaxed and feeling good, then, you know, we all know that they're better at being parents.
Well, how opportune a time is this for people to want to wander off and kind of get away from the news, the digital overload? I mean, is this now a moment in time for these kinds of places of contemplation?
You know, it's a whole different level, like with the internet, and the way that we are receiving information and news is so instantaneous. And I mean, we all know teenagers or people who are in their early 20s who are so attached to their phones, like it's part of their body, right? And so many of these places, like if you choose a silent retreat, you are turning off your technology. If you choose a place in the woods like Brighton Bush, there's likely no internet available because it's in the middle of nowhere. And so that's part of the experience, is being disconnected. And for me, it's hard to disconnect. So it's nice when it's almost where I choose it and it's forced upon me at the same time. So it's not like I can go, if we go to Brighton Bush, I'll just check my email once. Like, I can't. There is no internet for 10 miles.
No, that's wonderful.
So it's awesome.
I think that's what many of us need. I'm looking at one of these centers, the Rowe Center, which is in Western Massachusetts, and I'm looking at the various camps, and they've got a young people's camp, ages 8 to 11, a junior high camp, 13 to 15, senior high, then they've got a skill set for ages 20, 13, kindred spirits, women's circles, woman's soul. I mean, how much of this is really tailored more so to the interests of a particular group or age or women versus men? Or are they finding that now people are all looking for something like this just to get away, to kind of cleanse the soul and the mind? What are we seeing here?
You know, I think that it really depends on the focus of the retreat center. Some retreat centers, like you're describing, have, you know, try to support very specific groups. Some are teaching a general class. A place like the place I'm talking about that I'm familiar with, Brighton Bush Hot Springs, they have different classes very frequently. So a catalog will come out with all these different classes. So you can take a class or you can just hang out and relax in nature. And I think people can choose what they want. If you want to kind of do a deep dive into learning a new skill or being with like-minded people, you can choose that. Or you can just choose to be away from it all in kind of a supported setting, as opposed to like going camping where you have to bring all the stuff and plan things.
Yeah,
you know,
most of these places,
but that's a whole different thing,
really have a whole organized system, and they make it relatively easy for you. And then they focus on your interests and your concentration. For example, in this one Rose Center that I'm talking about, they have Fearless Creating for writers, painters, performers, and all creative souls. So you want to get together with other creative types. Then they even have a Restoring the Soul After War, a Memorial Day retreat for people in military service, veterans, and those who supported them. So they're getting very niche-oriented, aren't they?
I think some are. I think some are, and then some are more general. If someone is choosing something like going on a meditation retreat, sometimes that they have like women-only meditation retreats, but often it's just people who have that weekend free, right? And that's who shows up. So the niche market is interesting. And then if you really want something very specific, but some people don't want that. Some people want something more general. So I think the different retreat centers often offer all kinds of different opportunities, kind of depending on what your interest is.
This whole notion of mindfulness, getting back in touch with all of your senses when we've let certain ones atrophy over time, and I see one, waking your sleeping giant. How much of these are about you just stepping back and recreating who you are so that when you do go back into the hustle and bustle, maybe there are other things that you're now thinking about that may not have crossed your mind for such a long time being immersed in the day-to-day business of living?
Oh, it's such a good question. And I think why I've chosen to take, you know, days or a week out of my life at a time to just be quiet and sit still and be still, it creates such an incredible kind of settling of my system. So, you know, between a full-time job and a business as a travel writer and being a parent and a wife and all these different things in my life, it's a lot going on. And I often don't have minutes to sit still, right? Mm-hmm. And so giving myself time to just settle and doing that for days at a time, it reaches a level that you can't do even on a holiday, right? I mean, I just recently came back from Hawaii, and it was wonderful, and we had a great time.
But
as I was interacting and talking, it was not very internal. It was much more external. So a mindfulness or meditation retreat offers an opportunity to really take like an internal vacation and really kind of get in touch with myself. And the lasting benefits of it are pretty enormous. My husband went on his first meditation retreat about a year ago, and he was nervous about it because he'd never been in silence for days at a time. And he came back and he was kind of just like settled into his own self in a way that I hadn't really ever seen before in our years of being married. He kind of just had this big kind of grin that was not about anything. He just felt like he kind of reconnected with part of himself that gets kind of buried with all the things that we do all day.
How long do you have to go away? I mean, is there any prescription, 2 days at least, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days? Is there any a magic number?
I don't think so. I think whatever one doesn't sound super scary, you know, especially if you're going to that first one. Like people, at least in Portland, and I know in other places that have meditation communities, like people can do non-residential retreats where you just go and are quiet for a day with a group of people, where you just sit for 5, 6, 7 hours, and you can do that and just go home that evening. I think a weekend is a really good place to start, and then making sure that the whoever is the leader, the teacher, feels like someone that you would want to spend time with. And sometimes you don't know until you're there, but it's nice.
Well,
we've
all seen a movie about couples retreating and trying to get back in touch with each other. How important is that? Have you written at all about couples trying to work through their issues in a retreat setting like this?
I haven't. I've never written about that. And my partner and I have decided to not do retreats together. To have our own experience and then come back, you know, after doing that. I know people that do, and it's, I think the temptation to talk to the person that you're sharing your life with is pretty great in terms of a meditation retreat. But going away, you know, to hot springs with my partner is pretty fantastic.
When you
really
think
nice
about
quiet downtime.
When you think about the entire experience, lots of people think that you have to go to a place like Machu Picchu and you really have to be inspired by the shamans or whatever it may be. But you can find a lot more of this close to home, can't you?
You can find it in your living room if you close your eyes and sit down and be quiet a little bit. The experience of standing in on a site like Machu Picchu is pretty fantastic, and there's a lot of things going on there, but it's not necessarily an internal experience, right? So if you're looking for some of that inner travel, the amazing thing is that you can do that anywhere. I was at a doctor's appointment yesterday. I was waiting for the doctor to come in, and I just closed my eyes sitting in the chair waiting for the doctor, and, you know, it was probably 10, 15 minutes before she showed up, and I, after my workday, was just able to settle right in and just have a couple minutes to myself. Cool thing is you can do it anywhere.
It seems as if there are many more of these opportunities than there have been in the past, and that a lot of these retreat centers are acknowledging that the pace of our lives has really thrown us into a state where we want to find these experiences. And yet, as you say, we may not want to camp out. We may not want to do it all by ourselves. So this presents an opportunity for people really to shop around and look for the right experience for them and perhaps their family in total.
Yes, I think so. And I think it's important for people to imagine different ways of having a break, right? You don't necessarily have to go to Machu Picchu or go to Maui. There's lots of places where you can have you have to kind of know what you need, and then you can seek it in your state or local community.
Arielle Frager, I want to thank you for joining us today on America Trends Podcast. And this is going to be part of a series about travel that we're doing. And this one element to it, healing, meditation, family get-togethers, and just retreating from your normal activities. I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
John, we have had a great travel mini-series that we've been offering over the recent period. But we really thought, well, it was really your idea, John.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed this when you first had it. I it was a really fun interview you did. And, you know, it's kind of nice hearing somebody that you've watched on television, watched in movies, that isn't in trouble. From Hollywood, all you hear is who's in rehab, you know, who's divorcing who. And, you know, it just makes me sick. And this interview was really nice because here's this guy, he's been married a long time, and he drops his fly all the time, and his wife likes it.
That. Oh, wait a minute. Now you're really getting into trouble. And they don't even know who we're talking about. We're talking about Henry Winkler. The Fonz.
Hey,
Fonzarelli. Or was it Fonzarella or Fonzarelli?
Arthur Fonzarelli.
It was Fonzarelli. From Happy Days, and of course, well, Happy Days, they've lost a couple of some of the main characters from that time. Very, very sad. But Henry Winkler and Ron Howard, they go on. And the mother, I think Marion, she's still
around.
I think she's still alive.
Yep.
But Henry Winkler, I mean, he's gone on to do so many remarkable things.
Yeah, I know. I've seen him on several movies. In fact, on the Hallmark Channel, I've seen him on there a few times. So he's still up and...
And he's a much better actor than I think people ever gave him credit for. And a more serious guy. Somebody who went to Yale and he went to the School of Drama. I mean, a thoughtful man and just a delightful guy. Everybody who knows him loves him. And one of the people who knew him... You produced my radio program for a couple of years, but my first producer, poor you, they usually lasted about 2 years, and that was it. No, but Alan Todd,
nice,
who was my first producer, and he was also a radio broadcaster, and he went to school with Henry Winkler. Yeah, at Emerson College, which, if you don't know it, I know everybody talks about USC and different schools for drama. But this is a great school for communications in Boston. I think they have a Los Angeles campus now.
Oh, Emerson. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And I have a nephew who went
there. I had a TV one time. It was in Emerson.
Yes. Bada bing. And in fact, there was a great poet one time by the name of Emerson. But with
that said,
Henry Winkler, I mean, was such a delight to talk to because he wrote a book, and this goes back to 2011.
Right.
But you salvaged this. You found this
somewhere. Well, I mean, like I said.
You dusted it off.
As I said in the beginning, it was such a great interview. You did such a great job, and it's so nice to hear something different than, you know, the day-to-day politics and this and that. And, I mean, here is a guy that, you know, he's really a nice guy, a really happy guy, you know, and I admire that.
Well, let me ask you, how do you think we're able to attach like a carbuncle this particular episode onto America Trends podcast as part of our travel series? Do you think it fits?
I think it does because, I mean, especially if you listen to the interview, the way he gets out on the river and he gets relaxed and until he gets a fish, of course, but...
But then he releases them.
That's true.
And sends them back and hopes to see them again in good health next year and not in a supermarket shelf.
But it's just a way to relax and, you know, do something. You know, you can get out of the city and do something fun, you know?
Well, he wrote a book called I've Never Met an Idiot on the River, Reflections on Family, Photography, and Fly Fishing. And we're talking about Henry Winkler, Reflections on Family, Photography, Fly Fishing,
That's
Travel.
That's where the fly comes into play.
Yes. Thank you, John. He buttoned that up, so to speak. So Henry Winkler will end this series that we've been doing on America Trends podcast. And I hope you've enjoyed it. We've taken you to forbidden places. We've taken you on eco travel trips. We've made certain that you understand the many possibilities of a vintage river tour. And we've done a whole lot of things, told you about trends in travel. And now sit back, kick back, and enjoy the wonderful and delightful stories from Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you that the guest that we have coming on, Alan has never done this to me where he's hidden somebody and just put some initials on the board. And I said, well, who is this? He said, I'll tell you after the program a couple of days ago. And when he said it was Henry Winkler, I said, oh, my goodness, loved him. I have loved him, respected him. And then I started learning a lot more about him through this new book and remarkable story. And Alan, tell the audience how you know Henry Winkler.
Well, Henry and I went to Emerson College together. And we graduated together from the theater arts department, and they were that in our senior year there were only 10 of us that graduated from the theater department. So that was quite an honor considering we started with 242.
Wow, that is amazing.
Our class. And he was on the line last.
Wait a minute, it's too bad only one of you could be successful. And Henry,
that
of course is Alan, of course. Henry.
You know what? I have to tell you something. I have always been in Alan's shadow.
Oh, no.
Well, the shadow's getting a little larger these days, Henry. Might I just say that? How are you? It is such a pleasure to meet you. You're such a great guy. I mean, everybody can tell that just by your being. And Alan has relayed, well, some of the stories, Alan, forget them. Don't go over that, please.
Okay.
Okay. But, Alan, how do you want to get into this interview with your old friend?
Well, Henry, I read the book cover to cover, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. And
thank you.
Larry's going to go in.
The book is called I Never Met an Idiot on the River.
That's a fantastic title. That really
it is. And I'll tell you something. You know, there was another memoir about fly fishing that the former editor of the New York Times did, and I had read that as well. And there is something so. Yeah, isn't that a great book too? And there's just something about the serenity of the river. And here's a guy, you, from the hot concrete of New York, and not a real, shall I say, a guy who, you know, looks at himself as being braver than you should be in difficult circumstances, like not wanting to ride the motorcycle. And yet you find yourself out here wading in the middle of the river. What brought you to the river from giving your background?
You know, the first time I ever went fly fishing was with our lawyer, Skip Brittenham III. And I was his first client back in 1974. And he took us 25 years ago to Montana. And no pun intended, I was hooked. My wife and I loved it. We go every August. We fish in separate boats, but we have the most wonderful time.
Well, she describes why. Here's this otherwise unflappable, loving, committed, dedicated husband who gets out there and he becomes someone else. Is that true?
Well, it's true. You know, the fish are so hard to catch. If I got a feeling while we were in the same boat that there would be a fish near Stacy's line, I would have to drop my fly in there. And instead of a revolution on the river, we decided to go separate boats.
Well, you know, my wife and I do that with kayaks because I'm such an erratic kayaker. And, you know, but I understand that. I do. It keeps a marriage together. And you've had a great marriage, three wonderful children. I mean, you are a very blessed guy. And you acknowledge that. And you also talk about the dyslexia. And I'll tell you, even, you know, it's amazing to me the day-to-day issues that you have had to face. And similarly, our governor here in Connecticut, Dana Malloy, he's had dyslexia, and I don't know how you guys, you know, did what you did going on to Yale and getting your master's in theater. I just don't.
You know why? Because what you do is you learn to make friends with your learning challenges. You don't let them beat you into submission. You figure out a way in order to negotiate your learning challenges. That's one of the things that I learned on the river fly fishing for trout. I thought I couldn't fly fish. I thought it would be too difficult or too complicated for me. And one of the things I learned was that it made me so sad that I waited so long to do something that now is such a passion.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us, that is one of the really inspiring parts of the book, is to tell those of us who can be timid at times, and I know I'm like this, Henry, and maybe it's kind of a Jewish thing, but there are times when I don't want to, you know, try maybe a physical thing. And the minute you do it and overcome it, you feel so great about yourself, but to get
true,
you to do it.
And it's true. And that is the very basis of I Never Met an Indian on the River. I learned to take pictures. I learned photography on the river. I learned how to just stay calm on the river. You know, I see it as a washing machine for your brain.
Yes.
Well, are they out on the market yet? I'd love to get one. So, Alan,
they are. As a matter of fact, yesterday it was in the top 50 books of all the books on Amazon.com, and that made me so happy.
Well, that is great. Congratulations, Alan.
With the book, you mentioned two things that were not explained. One was blind casting, and the other one was dry cast. Now, what is meant by those two topics?
Okay. Well, let me just say that blind casting means that you don't know if there are fish there. You just have a feeling. Your instinct thinks that it is fishy. And then you try to put your fly there if you have that feeling, and lo and behold, a lot of times you're lucky.
Uh-huh.
Now the dry casting is the difference between. Did I lose you?
Yeah, you lost us for a moment. The difference between.
Okay, good. the difference between dry casting and nymphing is dry casting, you put your fly on top of the water, and it must float at exactly the same rate as a natural fly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me just tell you that while I'm talking to you on the phone, we're here in this hotel in Boston where I'm making a movie with Kevin James, and somebody was at the door, and I was getting my wife's coffee into the room, signing the bill, and explaining dry casting, and that's the power of fly fishing.
Well, people accuse us of dry broadcasting, so we just wanted to make certain we had a distinction.
But it's not. This is juicy.
Now, let me ask you about the river, because I love rivers myself, but I'm more of a kayaker and not a fisher. Convince me that I would get even more enjoyment getting out of the kayak and kind of standing and waiting in the river. Explain to us how long you stay out there, what you get, what you bring back. Give us a sense of what it is that really fills you back up again by being on the river.
Being on the river or mm-hmm. in the river,
yeah.
getting close to the river, the sound of the river is one of the most pleasing sounds to mankind. I always found that whatever problems I perceived I had or really had in the world, when I got on the river, it was washed away.
Beautiful. And, you know, you didn't learn until you were 31 that you had dyslexia. But,
that is true.
Those compensating factors that you undertook and that prove that, if you want something, you really could attain it. I mean, our governor, for example, he doesn't actually write anything. He has to communicate it to an assistant. He's got an incredible memory as a result. He has a difficult time reading. And yet this guy's brilliant. I mean, in his own way, he's a very bright guy. You the same? I mean, memorizing scripts and how do you do this?
You know what I always say to every child I meet is it doesn't matter how you learn, it doesn't matter at what rate you learn, it has nothing to do with how brilliant you are. You know, mm-hmm. just a learning challenge does not have to diminish your incredible experience in the world. It just means that you learn to negotiate spelling or math or reading or comprehension or whatever it is. But there's more than one road to get where you want to go. That's another thing that I learned on the river.
Interesting.
And then my photographs. When I was in Wyoming with my wife, we were in Jackson Hole, and I bought a photograph for $300 from this man. And I thought, ooh, could I ever take a photograph I would be proud enough to hang on the wall and not pay for, to pay somebody else? And I got a camera. My wife bought me my first camera, really. I'm too dyslexic to turn a knob on it. I don't know what all those things mean.
Mm.
And I was able then to take photographs, and some of them are there in the book.
Yeah, oh, they're beautiful.
Absolutely
they populate
beautiful.
The entire book. They really, really are. And they give everybody
Thank
a
you.
Sense of that tranquility that you find there. And, I was fascinated in the book to read about Neil Simon play and how, nervous you get. And that, I think, helps people also to understand that whatever it is they're trying to unleash in their own lives and the barriers that we often put up ourselves as opposed to anybody putting them up there for us and how you overcome
yeah.
that. Give people a sense of that, the live theater piece of your experience.
Well, it is really true. The fear that you have, the anticipatory fear, is worse than the actuality. So here it is, the one of the greatest playwrights in the history of theater calls and said, "Would you read my play?" Now, reading out loud is so difficult for me. I stammer. I fall all over the words. It is so difficult. And I thought to myself, I could say no, which would be easier. Maybe I will embarrass myself into oblivion. But then again, I would not have the experience of just being in the same room with Neil Simon. And I decided to read it, and it turned into going to Broadway for 9 months with John Ritter, my good late friend John Ritter. And I would never have had the experience if I allowed my fear to overtake me. That's another thing that I learned on the river.
And you really want people to take away these life lessons in reading this book. I've never met an idiot on the river. I love Adam Sandler's note saying, but he's never allowed me to go out with him, you know. So now this movie that you're making, tell us about you're working on.
I play a music teacher, and the high school is cutting the music program. Kevin James plays a slacker teacher who couldn't care less, but somehow gets it into his mind that he's going to save the music program and becomes an ultimate fighter.
Okay, so that's the story. And I'll tell you something. I mean, you have been in so many incredible shows, and I don't think people really have tallied up the number of awards you've won and the different roles you've played in the various creative arts. I mean, you've had a fascinating career. And, of course, everybody goes back to the Fonz, you know. But you said that you don't mind that.
And I have to tell you, that doesn't bother me at all, because I'm very fortunate that I got to play the Fonz for 10 years. I love the character. He introduced me to the world, as a matter of fact. And I'll tell you how great he is. He has read I Never Met an Idiot on the River.
And what does the Fonz say about it? I'm just curious.
You know what? He's going to write a review on Amazon that's very positive, he told
me. Good.
Alan, you thought you talked to yourself a lot, after working with me, but go on.
I was going to ask you, Henry, I heard a story many, many years ago about how you actually got the part of the Fonz. You were against, I guess, Mickey Dolenz was also going for the part.
Everybody in the room that was waiting to read for the producers, I had seen on television. Uh-huh. I must have been the only civilian. And I went in, I had six lines, and I just made the mental decision that the guy that I was reading with, the man who was reading the other lines, I was going to make him sit down. I was going to be the only one standing in the room. I walked out. I threw the script up in the air. And they called me on my birthday and said, hey, would you like to do it?
Wow. There's also a story about Mickey Dolenz going to the mirror and combing his hair, but you not combing your hair? In the auditions?
The story is this. In the script, it said Fonz combs his hair, by himself in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I had made a pact with myself that every character that has ever been like the Fonz on TV or in the movies has combed their hair. Uh-huh. I was never going to comb my hair. And the producer said, you must. It's written. You have to do it. So I went to the mirror, I pulled out the comb, I held it up, and I went, I don't have to because it's perfect. And right. I put it back in my pocket.
Uh-huh. How much was ad-libbed? How much of the Fonz was ad-libbed by you? Or how, as you got so comfortable with the character, how much did you redefine that role?
Well, redefining it, we found new things all the time. But as far as ad-libbing, I would try to ad-lib and then realize that sometimes the script was a lot better than me. And I went back to the script. There's very little ad-libbing. Gary Marshall is brilliant. Mm. And he had writers in the room that were 21 years old and 77 years old.
Oh.
And everybody in between. So that all of life was represented in that room.
Well, let me ask you something. I read something that I need some clarification about. Advance praise for your book, I've Never Met an Idiot on the River, and it's by Ron Howard. And it says, reading this book is like having a great conversation with my friend Henry. While telling stories about time spent on the river, he covers a lot of emotional territory with humor, wisdom, and visual beauty. It really makes me want to go fishing, too. Now, wait a minute. I saw him with a pole for years as Opie.
Yeah,
I saw him
acting
with Andy Griffith. What? He didn't know how to fish?
Acting.
Oh, my goodness.
Mostly, I'll tell you what he had in his hand when he was younger. He had a camera. He had a movie camera. He knew that he wanted to be a director for the longest time. That was his passion. And I think he did pretty well.
Yeah, I think he did okay for himself. Pretty remarkable talent along with you. Now, you were in Royal Pains, USA Network.
I am now, yeah. We start our third season in a week or two.
Oh, in a week or two. It's hard to follow with the cable. But I'll tell you, some of the best work in the world today is being done on USA Network, and you're a part of that.
Absolutely.
How proud are you of what you're doing today?
I love the show. As a matter of fact, this year, they introduce my father. So now there are three generations of Lawsons, and my father is played by Ed Asner.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's just fantastic.
Talk about a great
because
ensemble.
My first job... I'm so sorry I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
No, great ensemble to have, I mean, somebody like Ed Asner joining with you. He's remarkable.
It really is. And my very first job in Hollywood was the Mary Tyler Moore Show with Ed Asner.
Mm.
And now here, all these years later, he's my dad.
Wow. What a great career. What a great life. And, you know, you're together with your wife after all these years. I mean, you've really been blessed, Henry Winkler, and we blessed to kind of watch your great career and from afar, and also to realize some of the things you've overcome to make it all possible. And here you are. I've never met an idiot on the river. Is there a favorite part of the book and things that you explored?
I would have to say that I'm very proud. Very few human beings in the world have seen my photographs. And my children are pretty much the only ones. And they picked, you know, over the years their favorites. And that I've written any book in my life is pretty much an amazement to me, since I was told that I would never amount to much.
And you've got all the children's novels as well that really...
Yeah, with Lynn Oliver, we've written 17 novels.
Yeah, I mean, so you've got just so much to look back on and so much that you're doing today that reminds us of what you have done in your career. It's amazing. Alan?
Where can people get the book, Henry?
You can get it at any great bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. As a matter of fact, yesterday... it was in the top 50 of all the books on Amazon.com.
That is great, and deservedly so. And is it available through Kindle and all the e-readers and so forth?
It will be. I don't know if it is now. I'm not sure that Kindle will have the photographs, but when the iBook comes out, it will.
Okay. Are you going to be doing, I mean, given everything that you've been through, are you going to be doing an audio version for someone who might?
You know what? I don't know. I don't think they have asked me yet,
okay.
But I would.
Okay.
That would be a pleasure because I tried to write it like I'm having a conversation with you.
Oh, it's very readable.
Oh, yeah.
Very readable.
Great.
Yeah. Well, we've got to run.
I'll let Larry finish up.
No, thank you.
I just want to say, Henry, tight lines.
Tight.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And I think it would make a great Father's Day gift.
Oh, absolutely. And that is coming up. And by the way, Alan thought you were in Boston to go back to all the old speakeasies that you guys used to frequent.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you one of the great things that I did while I was here was not go to the speakeasies so much because they've closed. But I went back to Emerson and I taught three master classes for the acting department.
Oh, wow.
And that was exhilarating.
Oh, that is great. Going back to your alma mater and doing that. That is wonderful.
Yeah, those kids are talented.
And speaking about that, we have a big one coming up next year in June, our class.
We do?
Yes, our big, big anniversary of our graduation.
Which one?
Our 45th.
45th.
No kidding.
Yeah.
45th.
Next
June.
I'm
glad you brought that up.
Yep. Okay.
Where's
Make
my
sure.
walker?
And I've been emailing with a lot of Emerson people, and they say hello to you, and it's unbelievable. And they say, "Is he going to be there?" And I said, "I don't know."
And I want to see pictures of you and Alan on the Charles River fly fishing. Okay.
You know what? If I'm there, that's what we're going to do.
Okay, Alan.
Let's do it.
I want to see those pictures.
Let's do it.
Henry Winkler, a joy and an honor to have you on the program today. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you so much for this conversation.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us. But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, at Trends Podcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that, too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more, because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste, and you get more programming like this, and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. Let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.